I'm Lindy Moore.
And I'm Laura Hyatt. This is Don't Forget to Live Today, a podcast where we share the stories of real humans who have faced their own proverbial mountain and choose to live, not just exist. All right, welcome to After the Climb. We are debriefing on our recent podcast, episode number 4 with Hannah Patel. And Hannah is a friend of Lindy's in Atlanta. And just a little backstory in case you missed that episode. Hannah's son, Kai, was born deaf. But they didn't know that for almost a year. Through a random series of events, they finally figured this out and are on their way fast tracking to get to cochlear implants. And we think that the world is solved, except this cute little thing called COVID happens. And March of 2020, the world shuts down, which delays a lot of things. And so, if memory serves, it's like 18 months old before he gets his cochlear implants. But in the meantime, Hannah has basically put her life on hold. You know, she ended up having to quit her job because of all the doctor's appointments and whatnot and shuttling back and forth to different things. And so just to kind of bring you back into the story, Lindy, for this After the Climb series, I mean, I feel like you can kind of relate to that.
Absolutely. So I know when I had received my first diagnosis with cancer, that was back in June of 2019. And I remember I had a business coach that we shared the same business coach, Jordan Freed. Shout out for him. He's amazing. And he had to coach me through 2 full-time jobs. I was still working full-time in real estate, working with clients and also leading a team. And I all of a sudden had probably 10 plus doctor's appointments a week.
That's insane.
Take that into consideration. Like just the amount of time that is, the drive time, the wait, you know, for the doctors, and then actually be in the appointment and then digest all of the information that was told to you. And not even to mention if there was an emergency going on with another patient, the delays that would cost. You have to be extremely, extremely flexible when we're working around oncology patients and providers. So when Jordan coached me through that and I was realizing that I was like, I've got 2 full-time jobs right now. I knew when I was diagnosed the second time, and that was in the very end of September, I think it was September 31st or October 1st of 2023. No, oh my gosh, many years. It was 2021. I knew I wasn't going to be able to work.
Mm-hmm.
And so hearing Hannah talk about, you know, she had to stop working so that she could focus on this one thing that was going on with her family and her son. It was very similar. I immediately, my business partner and I immediately went into fix it mode. Let's build a bunker around the business. Let's make sure that our clients and our agents are taken care of. And Lindy has to focus on whether or not she's going to live or not. So then that continued. I thought for sure it would be, I don't even know what I thought, but I didn't think it was going to last longer than maybe 6 months.
Yeah. How long did it end up lasting total?
I think I was out probably close to a year and a half.
Yeah. I mean, it's a year and a half. That time you were out for however long the first go around. I mean, I just think about
it's been years out of my career.
Yeah. Well, years out of your life, too, that are defined by something crazy, you know?
I mean, it was my identity for a while. I mean, Lindy was breast cancer.
Yeah.
And it was just a challenge after challenge after challenge after challenge after challenge that I had to deal with. So I'm no I'm no stranger to challenges, that's for sure. And I didn't know when we were going to go over all of the surgeries and things I've had.
Well, hold on, I have a question. So you mm-hmm. said it was my identity for a while, which mm-hmm. would imply that it is maybe no longer your sole identity. So how do you break that? How do you navigate away from that?
Oh, well, it's been years.
Yeah. Okay. The time.
So time. Number one is time. Number two, therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I had a therapist that specialized in oncology that helped me kind of really realize that what I was doing, and I had disassociated myself from like my physical body. That's a whole
Which
other
is
conversation.
Probably really great to help you survive, but like once yeah. you're on the other side of that, not so great. You got to come back into the real world.
Come
into
back
life,
into to merge the two together. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I breast cancer to me now, I definitely, it's a part of me. I can emphatically say that it is not who I am anymore.
Mm.
Like I have new things on the horizon that define me, or that I want to define me more. You know, I'm back in my career. I'm back being a great mom. There's just so much more to live for. I want to go on vacation. Yeah. I want to go do
fun
things.
But it's not your whole story.
Yeah, for a while it was. To be honest, it was.
Of course. Of course. And it sounds like Hannah's kind of living that too, a little bit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I think that transition from like, it's all consuming.
Yes, okay.
It kind of has to be. And then one day you wake up and it's like, but it doesn't have to be anymore.
Yeah. Yes, that's exactly right. And so I remember, because I know Hannah, she lives in my neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And once you go into the... Once you get a diagnosis of any sort, you just sort of go into this identity and you start to seek out other people that have gone through it or something similar. And I think this is a natural thing for just us humans to relate to each other. And
yeah.
So I know for me, it was I'm in a lot of breast cancer Facebook groups where I would hear stories about other women and what they were going through. And I tried not to live in that world all the time, because what I realized was my story was unique, and I realized that other breast cancer patients felt sorry for me, and that was a big pill to swallow.
Unpack that. Why do they feel sorry for you?
Because of the amount of challenges and complications that I had, was really just, it was a lot. And so I'll give you the rundown on the timeline real quick of what happened, because I think that will
give some perspective maybe. Kind of,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So June 2019, I was diagnosed. I went through, had a surgery, I had a lumpectomy, and some oncoplastic reconstruction done and lymph nodes removed and tested. And then I did about a month's worth of radiation after my surgery. Then I started on hormone blockers because I had a hormone positive cancer. And I immediately started to gain weight and it freaked me out and mm-hmm. I stopped taking it.
So, oh,
I did.
For how long?
I don't know that I've really told a lot of people that.
Yeah.
Now I've told everybody. I took it for about 4 months and then I stopped. And so I felt, when my cancer came back, I felt a lot of shame and guilt around that. And my oncologist told me that if I had stayed on that medication, that it likely would not have come back.
Damn. Mm-hmm. That's something to wrestle with.
Yeah. So did I cause this myself? You know? And I don't know.
I don't to say. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. I don't really want to go there in my head.
No. And well, and here's the thing, as your friend, I'm not going to let you put that pressure on you. Like,
yeah,
no, we cannot change the past. Right.
Nope.
So why wallow
only go
in
forward?
It? Yeah. Why wallow in it? Acknowledge and move on.
I just struggled. I mean, I'll be pretty raw and candid. I was 36 years old and I gained 60, 70 pounds in the matter of 6-7 months.
That was a new one.
I mean, you just like I'm a female, right? I want to feel pretty. And I just gained all of this weight and I was just desperate to get the weight off me. And I blame the medication for it. And, you know, it was probably a mixture of just stress and all the stuff,
it
you know,
the compound effect. Yeah.
So about 18 months after that would have been, that was when I went in for my.
So from June of 2019 to say November, December of 20. That's 18 months.
It was 2 years. Sorry. It was my 2 year checkup from when everything was done, which would have been September of
21,
roughly 2021.
Yeah.
I went in. It was a routine checkup. I was the very first appointment there. I had to have an MRI. And at that appointment, I was going to go from the MRI to the mammogram because I still had breast tissue. And I was going to go meet with the doctor. So I always have described the doctor's office like a conveyor belt. You kind of start at one location, you go to the next, you go to the next. I was skipping the ultrasound that day. I didn't need to go. I didn't need to have it. I was going to go straight to the doctor's, you know,
like Monopoly.
Office.
Yes. Go collect your $200, move on. Yeah.
I was going to get out of there and be on with it. And remember, I was the first patient in.
Mm-hmm.
And I sat in the doctor's area waiting room and I counted how many people were called before me. And I saw 14 women's names be called before me and it was hours. And I knew at that moment something was really off, because at this doctor's office, they actually have radiologists on staff that are reading the MRIs and the mammograms like immediately. And I heard my name called instead of at the waiting door for the doctor's area. I heard it behind me and that was at the ultrasound area. And I had gotten called in for an ultrasound. And that was when I realized that, something was amiss.
Yeah. Were you by yourself?
They called me back there. I was by myself. This is still
because it's
COVID
routine.
Type.
It's a 2 year checkup. It's COVID times, like whatever, not a big deal.
Yeah. And this is like all women's area. Like men don't come back in this area. They're not allowed to come back there. And so I'm called back into the ultrasound. I lay down on the table. They start to do the ultrasound. So I already know clearly they're looking for something and they go directly towards the area of where my tumor was before. And full disclosure, I don't like Xanax or to take medication like that. However, when I have an MRI, I do take it because I need to be so still. And it's about a 45 minute process. So I take Xanax for that one appointment and I shot up in a full blown panic attack. I mean, couldn't breathe. I mean, could not. I just couldn't breathe. And I was so embarrassed. And the lady was so sweet. And she was like, you know, this is a lot. This is really stressed, especially when this is like right where the cancer was before. She calmed me down.
Triggering. Yeah.
Yeah. So I got through that and then went to meet my doctor and she called me out of the room. She brought me into her office and she pulled up her computer screen and said, you know, I want you to take a look at this. And she pulled it up and there were three tumors right in a row. They look like three peas in a pod. And that's actually how she described it. She goes, do you see this? These little three peas in a pod? And I was like, yeah. She goes, it could be fat necrosis or it could be the cancer had returned. And I said, well, if you were to bet on it,
mm-hmm.
what would you say? She looked at me dead in the eyes and was like, I wouldn't bet your life on it. And I just knew it was, the cancer was back.
Yeah. How do you even respond to, I wouldn't bet your life on it? Like,
I don't know that I did. Yeah. I just was like, okay, here we go. And the waiting game again for receiving, you know, that information, it was so incredibly tough. And so from there, a few days later, I got the results. She called me. It was like 9 o'clock at night. I was at a concert and I got the news. Yeah. I was at a concert. I talked to her while I was at the concert, trying to digest all of that information and it being really loud. I think it was at the State Farm Arena. And so then the whirlwind started. And I knew at that moment, all right, work has to stop. Here we go again. This is so much more complicated than what it was before, because I had just had a month's worth of radiation. I already knew doing surgery on radiated tissue is not a surgeon's favorite thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. The tissue is essentially burnt and healing. And so I the first thing we did was we got my double mastectomy. This is what I had to have on the calendar. And then before, this is the start, Laura, of the crazy.
Is this where the leeches come in? Is this where the stream is headed?
No, that's 6 months down the road.
Okay.
Yeah.
Stay tuned.
So I am waiting to have this, this double mastectomy. And we're only talking a matter of like a 3 week wait. And all of a sudden, I don't feel well. I'm at home and I'm like, oh gosh, I don't know what's going on. I don't feel well. And in my head, I was thinking, oh, I'm not going to, like, there's no way two things could be wrong with me. There's no way. And I was telling myself it was in my head, but I'm telling you, I wasn't feeling good. My husband drove me to the emergency room three times before I got out. I made him drive me all the way back to the house because I was like, oh, no, I feel fine. I did three times. I don't feel good. Oh, yes. Oh, my gosh. Yes. He, I'm sure he wanted to kick me out of the car and like just get out and go in. But I couldn't believe that I didn't feel so good. And it was in my back and side and stomach. I didn't know what was going on. I just had a lot of pain. Finally, I was in the fetal position on the floor. And he was like,
so
he
when
did
you
put his
slam
foot down.
Into the wall. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he's like, you're going in. And I get there and he drops me off again. COVID, nobody can go with you. Plus, we have a kid too. So, you know, somebody had to
watch
with,
himself.
With our son. Yeah. Exactly. I get in there, they do a CAT scan, and they're like, Lindy, you have a kidney stone that's too big to pass lodged in your urethra, or ureter, I don't know, whatever part of that
know.
Is.
Doctors, help us.
The top part, yeah. So I ended up having to schedule an emergency surgery, but it was a whirlwind.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I had to have a surgery to have that removed prior to having my double mastectomy.
If anyone's going to be extra, it's going to be you.
So it was just the worst luck. And there's so much more drama around that, too. That was insane. So I got that done. I then had the double mastectomy. Then the tissue was not healing. I had some skin necrosis on the side that was radiated. So this was only December. Okay. in December.
December of 2021, if you're keeping along, keeping up at home.
December of 2021, I went through about 20 rounds of the hyperbaric oxygen chamber to try to get more oxygen flow to that skin to save as much as they possibly could. It worked a little bit, but it wasn't what really needed to take place. I had to go in for an emergency surgery, had that skin removed, and then closed back up. 6 weeks after that, I started not to feel good again. And I'm not a complainer. When it comes to my doctors and things, I don't complain. It's usually I'm thinking it's in my head, all right? And finally, I called up to the doctor's office, to the nurse's line. Like, I don't know. I don't really feel good. I can't quite put my finger on it. They're like, well, send us a picture of your chest. And I did. And like one side of my entire chest was beet red.
Yeah. Like, Lindsay, that's called infection. And I'm not a doctor.
Yeah. I had cellulitis. And the reason I didn't feel good is because it was going all over the place.
Yeah.
So They brought me in. I had IV antibiotics. I ended up spiking a fever while on that IV antibiotics, and then they just admitted me straight into the hospital. And that was one of my longest stays at the hospital, is while I was getting IV antibiotics around the clock. Then,
cellulitis is no joke, not to interrupt, but like, we've navigated that with my dad, and he's been there a couple times, right? But there's also been a time or two where the doctor's like, you dang lucky to be alive right now. Because it can move so fast.
Yes. And they tried many different antibiotics, and it was showing to be resistant in the beginning, which is why I was there so long. They finally found something that worked, and it was this concoction. I mean, it was 24 hours.
You,
I was just getting it through.
You will probably glow in the dark, but at some point, but it worked.
Yeah.
You know?
So from there, that was January, February-ish timeframe. I had a PICC line in, and then was sent home with IV antibiotics for about three, 4 weeks, something like that. Got it out just in time to have my scheduled reconstruction surgery from the mastectomy. I'd had what's called I forgot a surgery.
You probably forgot several at this point.
When I had that infection, it still wasn't clearing out with the antibiotics. So they took me in for an emergency surgery, took the expander out, cleared out the entire just cavity, and I was inverted. That was
like upside down inverted, or like flipped over inverted. Okay,
my boob was.
You were face down, is what you're saying.
So it was that was really difficult because then I only had one breast. Again, I'm still kind of a girly female. Feels really weird to only have one boob, if I'm being honest. I get through that. I get through the home health and the IV antibiotics at home and whatnot. And then I have my scheduled deep flap reconstruction in the beginning of March. And that surgery, it's called deep flap. That's the acronym for it, but it is a deep inferior epigastric perforator flap. Reconstruction where it was a very long surgery, and the initial one took 8 or 9 hours.
That's what I was going to say, nine. I remember you texting us, like, going in, and then it was a while before we got the all clear sign.
Yeah. So it was great sleep. I don't remember it. So that was a surgery where essentially the my reconstruction surgeon plus a microvascular surgeon went in and took arteries from my stomach that were connected to fat in my stomach and skin, and then they replaced it by attaching them to my mammary arteries, like going through my sternum and in my ribs, and then a reconstructing my chest wall with that tissue. So I came out of that surgery and realized that one side had failed, and that is where I had leech therapy to keep the flap alive because it was saturated in blood. So they put
I'm at a big hospital. Yes. Bug leeches. Are they a bug? I don't know.
Are they bugs? I don't know what they are. Amoeba? I don't know.
Things from the Middle Ages.
Yes. Yes. Attached to me. I was too exhausted and hadn't eaten for days. So whatever they wanted to do. I do have pictures. Maybe we should put one online.
Maybe we won't.
Maybe we won't. We'll see. But it was such a kind of an anomaly at the hospital that the nurse asked me, hey, do you mind in the name of science if I have some of the other nurses come and watch so they can be educated on this? And I was like, sure. Why not? In the name of science.
One more person.
I mean, I'm not a complainer. I'm like, whatever. 17 nurses showed up in my room. I was like, you went to other floors, ma'am.
You found them. You were like, it all call on the intercom.
And this was overnight, okay? It was like from 1 o'clock, maybe about 1 o'clock to the morning, into where they were just trying to keep the blood out of the flap until my surgeons could get back there in the morning and do another surgery. It was another 4 or 5
and
hour surgery.
The reason you had it time out was because your surgeons needed to go rest. Like they cannot continue to operate for that long. They needed sleep. We want them to have sleep before they go back in. And the leeches were like the Band-Aid to get you through the night, essentially.
Yep. That's exactly right. And so I had another surgery, emergency surgery the next day. Came out, all was well. They did an amazing job. They ended up having to retrieve some different arteries. I couldn't even tell you which ones they were. I think
doesn't matter. We're not doctors.
Yeah. Don't need to know. It worked. That's all I need to know. And then from there on, I had a massive, abdominal wound, like just from the surgery itself.
Yeah.
So I couldn't stand up for about 6 weeks, really 3 weeks. I couldn't stand up at all. And then it took me about 6 to 8 weeks to kind of be able to stand up straight again.
And that's the time that you decided you're going to climb Kili, right?
Oh, the time that I decided I was going to climb Kili was the time where I had the cellulitis.
Oh, okay, cool. So when there was this massive like bacterial infection happening, you're like, you know what, sounds good, climbing a mountain, let's do that.
That was
okay.
If I'm being honest, that was one of the times where I didn't know how bad it could be and if I was gonna be like, if it would get worse and I would make it. Like I was terrified. So from there, there was another point. Back up to December, forgot about this. I also had COVID and had to isolate from my family for 10 days. So it was right after the surgery, had to remove the skin necrosis. I also had COVID for 10 days. So that was hard. Then the cellulitis thing happened. Then the deep flap surgery.
I mean, I feel like we should just tell your body, like, we don't need to collect any more bingo points. Like, we're good.
Then, so that was, the deep flap was in March, April, May, June. I had I had to have a hysterectomy.
Right.
All in line with, female
anatomy,
stuff.
Getting all that out.
Yeah. Yep. So I had that surgery. Then July, I had shingles.
Keeping up at home, guys, where our bingo card is now full, please flip over and get a new one. Oh my gosh.
Yep. Then in August, late August, like early September, I don't remember the exact date on this one. I ended up having a reconstruction of the deep flap. Then in October, I had another reconstruction.
That was after we were together in Austin, right?
Yes, yes. And to put the timeline into perspective, my kidney stone surgery was October 21st, 2021. That last reconstruction, I say last because I've had surgery since then, mm-hmm. but in that span of time, my last surgery was October 20th, 2022.
And how many were in between?
It was, like 10? It was 10
yeah.
full surgeries and two cases of COVID and a case of shingles. So you
and
do the math.
Stone. Oh, and cellulitis.
Uh-huh. It yeah. was literally every few weeks I was getting bad news, right? So I'm trying to paint the picture.
Yeah. Well, here's, so I have two thoughts running through my head, right? Yep. One hand is when this thing kicks off again, you know something's not good.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
It's just you. And you're sitting there along with your thoughts. Like, how do you handle the waiting? And then my other thought is, okay, it is like punch after punch after punch. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you keep going?
Oh my gosh. That year was so hard to receive such bad news every few weeks. Literally bad news every few weeks. Mm-hmm. I don't know how I kept going. I just kept going. There was no choice. I wasn't going to wallow or not put myself back together. But the reason I went down this kind of timeline with you is to also throw in there the week after I'd had my big surgery, the deep flap surgery, the one where I was in there for 9 hours, went back for 5 hours. I had received a notification that my child did not get into the private school that I wanted him so badly to get into. We live in a school district where we moved here for this particular private school.
Sure.
And we did everything right on paper. All right. Like, we did all the tours. I made my husband leave me in the hospital while I had my double mastectomy to go tour the school because that was the day that it was scheduled. I would rather him be at the school and doing everything possible to make sure my son could get in there than to be with me in the hospital. So I found out about a week later that he didn't get in, and it just, I couldn't quite figure it out. And I needed to go and I needed to know why. I was like, why did this happen? Why didn't we get in? I mean, everything on paper looks good to me.
Mm-hmm.
So we ended up at the recommendation of the administrative staff there and at the preschool he had been at to go ahead and have a psych eval done. And so we did. I probably wouldn't have done it if I just wasn't like in let's go figure things out mode. I might have waited a little bit longer. Yeah. But thank goodness I didn't, because in the middle of that, all of that stuff going on, I learned that my son has dyslexia and dysgraphia, and it all made sense. Hmm. But it was still such a blow to also receive this bad news. I'm like, how is this going to impact him for the rest of his life? I'm sure Hannah felt the same way when she learned that Kai was deaf. I mean, they're two totally different things, but as a parent, you know, you don't want an obstacle for your kid that they're going to have to.
You want the best for your kids, right? Every parent wants the best for their kids. And there's, I mean, this spectrum or the scale, there's a myriad of things, right? And deaf and dyslexia are two things that will follow you, will come with you for the rest of your life. They just do, you know? And at some point you have to be like, okay, well, how do we solve the problem today? But then also, how do we set our kids up for the future for them to be able to handle this and navigate whatever this world looks like for themselves?
Yeah. I quickly went into, all right, give me the list of schools that can help, you know, students with dyslexia. And what I learned was Atlanta is very rich in their schools to help treat this, mm-hmm. or to remediate it. It's not really a treatment, but to remediate it and kind of get past, they learned their skills to be able to read.
Yeah.
So Yeah, I had noticed that Townsend, much like Hannah, kind of noticed some things, right? I noticed Townsend really struggled with the ABCs, even from the time that he was a little. I mean, it probably took us 4 months to learn the ABCs. Now, I'm a first-time mom. I didn't really know that that sure. was a long time.
I mean, I have no idea how long it takes.
Yeah, I was like, why doesn't he get it? Why, like, what's going on? Because he's such a smart little boy. That's the thing. He's so smart. So anyways, we got this diagnosis. I went into overdrive. I toured all the schools I could possibly tour. And then we came across this school called the Skank School. It's in Atlanta. And it is just for kids with dyslexia. And wow, my world opened up so big. What I thought I wanted was this other school. That was my plan, right?
Yeah.
But it wasn't what was needed. And the fact that they really gave me, you know, we talk about gifts, right? They gave me the gift of knowing early that my son was dyslexic, so much earlier to where it honestly has not affected his confidence. And that's all awesome. As a mom.
Oh, yeah.
That I would want, because so many kids don't find out until they're later and they think they're dumb or they're slow or they lose their confidence and then they start to try to remediate it. And he had no clue.
Oh, man. Because he was, what, 5'6", I guess, when you figured it out?
Yeah. Around there.
Yeah.
So we got him into, we did the whole, I turned everything around, right? I'm like, all right, now we got to go do the tours. We got to do all the things to get him into this school. And the tour we had was the week before we left for Mount Kilimanjaro. It was one of the tours that I went on. I sat down with the administrative team and was just telling them a little bit about what our family had gone through. And because I feel like it's important for teachers to understand what's happening in the family dynamic at home as well, to get a real picture. And I wanted them to know, like, if something's off, I want it to be addressed and brought to my attention. So that's why I was telling them a little bit about my situation. And, you know, I left there and it was great. And you normally don't find out for 3-4 weeks or so. Everybody finds out pretty much at the same time. I got home that day and I got a call from the school and I was like, oh, they must have forgot something. And I picked up the phone and they're like, we just wanted to let you know. We know that you're going to go climb Mount Kilimanjaro. And we want you to focus on that mountain and not be worried that your child won't have a place in school. So we're going to go ahead and let you know that we're going to accept him. And that was the moment where I was like, this is the school for us. They didn't just care about the well-being of my son. They cared about
the whole family. Yeah.
And my feelings and what I was going through, and I was just blown away. And I've been blown away this entire time about that school. They have been such a gift. My son is reading. He's reading little books. Like with paragraphs, and he went from a 20% reading proficiency to 90% reading proficiency in less than 6 months.
See, it's just about having the right resources, you know, and not giving up, I think, is the other thing, right? If I remember correctly, we were talking to Hannah, that this person calls her with all these resources and she tells her, try them all, pursue them all, and then you can figure out what works and doesn't work. And I think that's such a great lesson, right? Because you kind of ruin the same thing. Like, let's try it all and just see what happens. And how often in life do we choose just the one thing, right? Oh, well, that must be the solution. And it's great if it is, but if that door slams shut, then your world is crushed. So why not try it all? Why not push on every dang door and see which one has the solution that's going to be best for what's going on for you?
What a year that was. Wow.
Yeah. I have a lot of texts that year from you, from the hospital.
Yeah, I was in and out of the hospital constantly.
Yeah.
It's so strange, too. I felt like I was way too young. I was 38 years old. It's like, this is not fair.
I mean, it's not. Let's be real.
I'm supposed to be in the prime of my life.
Supposed to be 30s are fun. Yeah. Well,
but that's why I stood on top of the roof of Africa on my 40th birthday. It was because I needed to close out that decade. There are some great memories from that decade and just some harrowing ones. And so 40s, I'm just declaring, is going to be fun and healthy and prosperous.
Yeah. I mean, you told me when we were climbing, you said, well, it was because your birthday's in February. So he said, 2022, I told cancer to F you. And 23, I'm taking my life back. And then what I told you was, yes, 2022, you did tell cancer to F you. And 2023 was about your body letting you know that you could.
Yeah.
And now 24 is your mind is coming into play. Yeah.
Yeah. We've definitely discussed that before about how I felt that it's just that I thought that my head was screwed on straight in 2023. I was like, oh, you know, I'm good. I'm fine. No, it wasn't until 2024. And that's this year that things have just started to align again. And I can truly feel again. I mean, I was so numb for so long. I didn't have a lot of feelings towards things, well, but you asked how I got through it. Like, I really did disassociate my feelings away from everything that was going on. In this past November, which was November 2023, I did have one more surgery. And that surgery opened my eyes to just how much I went through, because that surgery was not a big surgery. It was just a very little minor tuck. I had to have a new implant put in, just some little things being done, but it wasn't big. It wasn't like, to me, it wasn't a huge surgery.
Well, in the grand scheme,
but I really was in a lot of pain, and I was on the medication again. And as soon as I was on that medication again, I thought, wow, I lived an entire year like this. And that was so bad and hard. Yeah. And I felt so bad on the medication again. It just opened my eyes up to, like, gosh, Lindy, you went through a lot. That is one of the reasons why I'm doing better today. I think I just needed to recognize, like, oh, that was hard. And Lindy, you are a badass for getting through all of that.
Yeah, there's a quote that I'm reminded of. It roughly says, just because you carry it well doesn't mean it's not heavy.
Yeah.
So for all you strong-willed, strong-backed people, preaching to the choir here, to myself, just because you carry it well doesn't mean it's not heavy. Like, you still have to take care of yourself. I think part of taking care of yourself is acknowledging that it is heavy.
For sure.
You know, our coach that we share likes to say that all change goes through three phases: awareness, ownership, and practice. Right. So first off, being aware that, dang, that was hard, or that is heavy. And then you own it, like, well, it's my story, or this is what I can do about it. And then the practice of how do you want to move forward? And practice does not denote arrival. Practice means every day. You give it your best shot.
That's right. Wow. I didn't know that I was going to go through all of that today, Laura.
Me neither. I didn't see that one coming.
I did not see that coming.
Such it is at After the Climb. You never know where it's... We literally never know where this conversation is going to go. And that's what you and I both appreciate about it, is that we know our starting point.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what happens after that, right? But we'll go figure it out.